Hi everyone, erev tov, or good afternoon, wherever you are. Last week we learned a topic which I felt was a good example, a reflection of certain challenges that were not maybe clearly halachic ones, but for sure were religious, theological, and a bit philosophical challenges that faced many. People here in Israel during the months of the war, and that was whether or not it would be the right thing to get married in such difficult times. We said that on one hand, it would seem that perhaps it's not the right time, and we try to bring many proofs, or at least some kind of ideas to argue that perhaps it's not the correct time. And on the other hand, we said that there's another side to it, which would be to argue that perhaps now more than ever we need some kind of inspiration and something to boost ourselves and to give us strength as a response to these difficult times. And perhaps Dafka getting married is a very powerful way of responding to terror, to responding to despair. And like I said, there are sides to hear. I didn't come to make a decision. I don't. Who am I to make a decision? But I'm saying I just wanted to bring it up and share with you this dilemma that I think many of us are going through. And as I said last time, I think this dilemma to some level exists even with the people that are not in the front line, even those who are not fighting. I think it's a very good dilemma that many of us have, which is, how do we really live our regular lives at a time when so many people are suffering around us? How do we make ourselves somehow realize that life is not normal, even though for many of us it is? But there's some kind of need, I think, that we all have to show a sympathy and empathy to our brothers and sisters who are in captivity, our brothers and sisters who are fighting. And that's always going to be a very difficult challenge. What makes this one very, very unique is that I don't remember the last time that we had a war for 5 months. If not mistaken, in Israel, we've never had such a long war. I mean, 48 war. Okay, 48 war was a longer war. I really hope that we don't compare ourselves to 48 war. But since 48, really, we have not experienced such an ongoing, such a situation, and so many people being captive for such a long time. Again, we had people like Gilad Shalit, who was for a few years in captivity. But I think that the numbers and the fact that we're talking about citizens and women and babies is of course affecting us all. I would like to continue today's shiur, not with the same idea, but a similar question, which again I think seems to reflect an atmosphere that existed and exists within the Israeli society. It is true that nowadays what I'm about to talk about is not very relevant and practical like it used to be, but in the first few weeks of the war, this is a topic that came up consistently, and I'm referring to the question whether or not it would be permitted to allow Israeli soldiers to travel back and forth home on Shabbat, even if the reason of traveling back and forth is just because they have a few hours given to them to refresh themselves, to visit their parents, to visit their wives, to visit their children. This is something that really came up many times during this current war, especially in the beginning when many people were drafted for and were not even fighting yet and were just waiting around, all waiting to go to war, and no one knew at what point they're going to go in. But even after they did go in, there were times when a guy was given a few hours. Go home, visit your family, and it happened to be on Shabbat. And the question was, does that justify breaking Shabbat, driving on Shabbat, traveling on Shabbat for the purpose for the to visit your family and to see your loved ones. So even though this question did come up in the past in different opportunities, I see we have Seth here, who was a soldier I know many years ago in the army. Maybe you can remember such a story, Seth, that happened to you, but it really happened so many times, and the rabbis really responded to it, I think, this time very differently than they have in the past. The main question in front of us is, how much are we going to take into consideration the mental state of a soldier? I'm talking about someone very like that's not in an extreme situation that really needs that requires some kind of real mental health. I'm talking about very kind of a routine life in the Israeli army, in which you're given a few hours to go home after you have been home for 3, 4 weeks. And obviously going home would really boost your morale, would give you strength, it would give you your for sure your loved ones would are worrying for you. You would calm them down, which might calm you down, right? So how much are we going to take in consideration the mental state of our soldiers gaining from meeting their families as an important factor to allow us to break Shabbat? That's basically my main question, which I want to discuss today. So as an introduction, let's first of all realize that the idea, the notion that a mental state of a person has to be taken into consideration in Jewish law, I think is a well-known idea. I don't know if people are aware always that that is the reason for certain considerations, but I want to mention some of them to show you that this is not a new idea. Oh, but the notion that this is something important, I think, is not new. And I would like to start with that. My first example will be Pikuach Nefesh on Shabbat. We know that one of the most important principles that exist in Jewish law is that if someone's life is in danger, what we call Pikuach Nefesh, it overrides Shabbat. If someone is sick, if someone is in a situation where their life is in danger, even if it's a doubt, a safek, we're not sure, where it's a concern that life is in danger, we break Shabbat. Very, very famous halacha, well known in Jewish law. However, there are certain situations that it is not so clear how far one may go to break Shabbat in those. I'll give you a few examples, and I'm suggesting a few situations that we can discuss together. One of them is, I'll read you the Shulchan Aruch. Hayachule, I'm sorry, but it's not in the sheet that I sent. I will refer to the sheet that I sent in a few minutes. The Shulchan Aruch in Siman Shin Kafchet, Seif Yudalin, says the following: Hayachule sheyesh bo sakana tzarich basar. I have a sick person who is very sick, sick in a way that it's dangerous, and he's a chole sheyesh bo sakana, what we call, and the doctors. I wish I would have doctors like this, who say the only way that this person is going to survive is he must eat a good steak. Halavai aleinu, doctors like that today. Anyway, that's the doctors in the time of Shulchan Aruch. So now, what is permitted to do for a person in that circumstance? Oh, simple. You're allowed to go. It's Shabbos, but obviously, because pikuach nefesh, you can go and shecht an animal. And cook the shech and cook and kasher the meat, even, right, if need to be, and serve and cook it and roast it and make a nice piece of steak and serve it to the person who is sick. However, what happens if I have in front of me a nice piece of fresh chazir, nice piece of chazir, treif lemehadrin, with an apple even in the mouth, mamash, and the doctor says, listen. The guy has to eat meat. From where I come from, the doctor says he can eat either chazir or kosher meat, it makes no difference. He has to eat meat though. And he has to eat it in the next few hours. And it makes no difference. So here's a dilemma. If I eat the chazir on one hand, the sick person is eating chazir. It's a terrible thing to eat chazir. Obviously he's allowed to because his life is in danger. However, he's eating chazir. Alternatively, I can go out, break Shabbat, cook on Shabbat, but he'll eat a kosher lemehadrin steak. What is preferable? Which one should I choose? So Shulchan Aruch says, Shochatim lo, ve'ein omrim na'achilenu nevela. Shulchan Aruch paskins, we don't give him the chazir, we break Shabbat, we shecht, we cook, we make the food for him. What is behind this decision? What is the rationale of the Shulchan Aruch to make such a decision? So some people, if I was in a classroom, I'm sure people would like jump up and say, oh, very simple. This is probably the famous machloket regarding pikuach nefesh on Shabbat, if it's hutra or dchuya. And I'll explain. The poskim argue the following. Everyone agrees that pikuach nefesh overrides Shabbat. But the question is, what does that mean, overrides? Does it mean that it's such a powerful idea that it's as if Shabbat doesn't exist anymore? Yes, the pork is already cooked. Yeah, pork is already cooked. Mrs. Shapiro, yes. No problem. So everyone agrees that pikuach nefesh is docha Shabbos. But does that mean one possibility is it's such a powerful idea that we view the situation as if it's a secular day, a regular day of the week? It's not Shabbat. Shabbat is gone. The person in front of me's life is in danger. All I have to think about is how to save this person's life. I don't even take into consideration that today is Shabbat. However, the other possibility is the Torah permits you to break Shabbat, but it's still Shabbat. We call that Shabbat Dichuya. Shabbat is postponed, not annulled, not canceled, but postponed. I'll give you the famous difference, Nafka Mina, between both possibilities, for example, is let's say I can break Shabbat the same way, with the same consequences. One, by asking a non-Jew to do it, or by a Jew doing it. So if you say it's not Shabbat today, the first possibility, then there's no reason for you as a Jew not to do the melacha, break Shabbat. But if you say Shabbat is just dechuya, Shabbat is postponed, then if I have in front of me a non-Jew, then theoretically I can ask a non-Jew to break Shabbat for me. That's the famous machloket, is Shabbat as hutra or dechuya. The Rama and Shulchan Aruch paskins that Shabbat is dechuya. The Rama says, if a person is in a life and in a life-threatening situation on Shabbat, you have to do what you can to save your life. If you could, without any consequences to the patient or to the situation, you can actually ask a non-Jew to break Shabbat. You could do it midrabanan. If you could break Shabbat midrabanan, not de'oraita, and there will be no difference in the result, you should break Shabbat midrabanan. Why? Because Shabbat is just postponed. It's still Shabbat, but you should try not to break Shabbat if you don't have to. By the way, that is the common rule that we go by today in the Jewish communities. I'm saying it very carefully because people have to realize, obviously, Shabbat overrides pikuach nefesh. There's no question. And if there's and if something is really in danger, we don't think twice and we just break Shabbat. But especially in situations of what we call routine pikuach nefesh, right? Scenarios that are not I'm calm and I can do them perhaps in a different way. Then we tell people, do it in a different way. Oh, some people will say, this machloket has to do with our question. If Shabbat is hutra if it's not Shabbat at all. So you might as well shecht an animal. But if you say Shabbat is just postponed, I'm sorry, the opposite, I'm sorry, I apologize. If you say it's not Shabbat at all, then you might I'm getting confused 1 second. Yes. I apologize. I've been confused for a second. If Shabbat is Hutra and it's not Shabbat, then we shecht the animal for him. We shecht the animal. Go ahead. It's not Shabbat. There's no reason not to cook an animal on Shabbat. But if Shabbat is Dechuya, then really, I'd rather eat the meat that's already cooked. Why should I break Shabbat? Yeah, he's eating tripe, but he's allowed to eat tripe. Some people make that argument. However, the Mishnah Brura says the following. Harbe Rishonim katvu de Shabbat rak dechuyahi. The Mishnah Brura says, like we just paskin. We paskin Shabbat is dechuya. We paskin that is still Shabbat. And yet we say you're allowed to shecht a kosher animal. Why? Give him the trace. Said the Mishnah Brura, hatamu deshema yekat ba'achilat nevela. Because we are concerned that if our patient is served chazir, he might feel sick just from the chazir. He might feel, oh, that's disgusting. I don't want to eat treif. Give me a, the doctor said I have to eat a steak. Give me a kosher steak. What do you want from me? Why should I eat treif? Why do I have to eat treif? So even though, perhaps halachically, it would be correct to give him the pork, the Mishnah Brura paskin, the Mishnah Brura explains, according to the Ramah, we shecht the animal because we're taking in consideration what might go through the person's mind, the way he will respond to this. A normal person that's frum doesn't want to eat chazir, doesn't want to eat treif. He wants to eat kosher. Why should he suffer because he's sick? It seems that this is a good case to prove that we will take in consideration the mental situation of the person. We don't want him to get agitated. We don't want him to get upset, even though we can say, according to the Torah, you have to eat the treif. No, we realize that it's not so simple for a person to eat treif. So because of that, we allow to break Shabbat, shecht an animal, and cook it. So here is an interesting case that we take in consideration the mental state of a person and how he will respond and react to certain situations. I'll give you another case. I love this example because I think that everyone probably will agree with me to some extent, I hope. Well, if you can't, you're all on mute anyway. Something that changed in the past 100 years, not only in the Jewish community, but also in the non-Jewish community, is whether or not men should be where their wives in delivery room. If I'm not mistaken, I don't know what year, but for many, many years, men weren't allowed to enter the delivery room. And I'm talking about the non-Jewish world. It was, again, I don't know if there's any doctors here, but or people remember when they birthed. It was a no-no. Men weren't allowed in. Then people started saying, oh, it's actually quite important for women, for men to be in the room with your wife to give her support. And then it became, Amish, if you're not there, oh my God, right? If you don't make it to the delivery room, you're the worst father that imagine. And the idea of supporting your wife is very important. Now, I'm not going to go right now into halachic discussion, because there is a famous halachic discussion whether or not a man would be permitted to be in the delivery room. That's not my topic right now. I'm not going into it. But I will tell you that many rabbanim today agree that men should be there because it's important to be there and support your wife to the extent that we allow men to accompany their wives on Shabbat. We allow men to drive on Shabbat. Now, I'll say this very open. My wife may be actually listening to me right now, which is fine. But I can tell about my wife and myself. Very, very simple. I was at Baruch Hashem all our deliveries. But I'm telling you now, if I wouldn't have been there, my wife would have delivered the same exact baby with the same way with me there or with me not there. It depends upon the couple, right? Every couple is different. But, and I drove on Shabbat. I drove on Shabbat with my wife because the idea that we're all accepting is that it's so important to support your wife that we don't even, you know, we don't even consider, wait a second. Does this husband really have to go? Does this husband really have to go and support his something? We don't do that. We just say, go with your wife. Support her. So again, this is a great example where in today's society, we don't even question this because we are so used to this idea that supporting your wife, giving her a strength, right? You're not a doctor. You're not a nurse. Why is the husband there? Moral support, empathy, to rub her hand, you know, to say it'll be okay. Is that really pikuach nefesh? I don't think so. I'm sorry to say, I don't think that's a pikuach nefesh. And yet, because we realize how important it is for the wife in her situation of giving birth, we support this idea. So here's another example where we take that into consideration. One of the more extreme cases in the history of the state of Israel, that this I think was the main issue on the table. If I'm not mistaken, I gave this share once over to this group. Is of course a dilemma regarding breaking Shabbat to bring bodies into burial. This was the big dilemma during the Yom Kippur War, whether or not it is allowed to break Shabbat by gathering Israeli soldiers that were lying dead in the field and bringing them to an area to collect the bodies and put them in a respectful area before burial. This dilemma came up in the Yom Kippur War on both fronts, on the northern front and the southern front. It is so amazing or unique, or I don't know what the word to use because it's not it, that this question came up at the same time and at both fronts by two rabbis who never spoke to each other, who had the same dilemma, and both ruled the same ruling, which was an original ruling that was never used ever in the history of the Israeli army. They both, without having a WhatsApp in the 70s, right, without having a computer, without having a phone, they both decided that due to the dire circumstances of so many bodies piling up in the battlefield, that they felt that this was hurting the morale of the Israeli soldier who was fighting in the Kippur War. It was leading them to despair, that they felt it was important enough to break Shabbat, to break Yom Tov, even though that's against army regulations. By the way, in the Tanakh, we find already that in one of the wars, there was a situation where someone was killed, and just the fact that his body was lying there created such a feeling of despair by the people. I'm just looking for the pasuk. One second. It's in Shmuel Bet, Perek Bet. It says like this. Just 1 second. In pasuk of Gimel, it says Vayakehu Avner. Avner kills Asael. Vayipol Sham Vayamot. Vayihi Kol Haba Elamakom Asher Matal Sham Asael Vayamot. When the comrades, the soldiers saw their fellow lying there and he was killed, it created such a feeling of despair that it affected the war. It created fear. It created a low emotion. The response was a one of despair, of fear, and that can really affect the war. And that's why the rabbis in the Yom Kippur War both agreed to break Shabbat and gather the bodies and bring them to burial. One of them at the time quoted a tshuva of Rav Gorin, Chief Rabbi Gorin, who at the time was gave the following psak. Rav Gorin, during the war of attrition, you know, it's very interesting because most Israeli kids, when you tell them the war of attrition, they don't know what you're talking about. Mechemet HaTasha. 3 years ago, the state of Israel officially recognized that there was a war called the attrition war, the war of attrition. We have this habit of every few years arguing whether or not we should recognize a war as an official war. Recently, the Second Lebanon War was agreed to be recognized as an official war, the Second Lebanon War. Between the First Lebanon War for 20 years was considered a war of 20 years of it. I actually got in the mail a letter. Whoever was serving the army those years was recognized as he served as if in a war. A few years ago, they agreed that the war of attrition, i.e. the war between the Six-Day War and the Yom Kippur War, those years, there was a silent war going on the borders of Israel. Many Israeli soldiers were killed. But life was going on as usual. But there was a lot of battles and going on between Syria and Israel, between Egypt and Israel. During that time, before Pesach, there was a group of Israeli soldiers who were given the task, the mission, to kasher the kitchens down in Sinai by the Suez Canal. Now, those of you who know about the Israeli army, so you know that before Pesach, there's an operation called Mivtza Pesach. Every year, a week before Pesach, they draft thousands of Israeli soldiers, usually in the rabbinate, and every few soldiers are given an army base, and in 24 hours, they kasher the whole Israeli army in 24 hours. So these guys were given the mission to fly down to the Suez Canal and kasher the kitchen. They came to Rav Gorin and they said, Rav Gorin, are you nuts? There's a war going out there. We are going to kasher a kitchen under fire? It's dangerous. We might get killed. So Rav Gorin said, yeah, yeah. So they said, Rav Gorin, we did our homework. We found out that army base that you want to send us to, all the soldiers said they're not interested in eating kosher. They happen to be a group of what we would call secular. They don't care about Pesach. They don't care about chametz. So we're going to go to a war zone, danger our lives for people who can eat chametz anyway. Bemet, Rav Gorin. What do you think Rav Gorin told them? He told them, you got to go. You got to go to kasher kitchen. I don't care. He said. They said, why? He said, because I want every Israeli soldier to know that we will be there for them wherever they are. They're fighting. We will kasher their kitchens. We will support them. We will not forget them. They will get the support and all what they need, even if they don't want it. There's no such thing, Rav Gorin said, even to endanger the life of soldiers in this situation. This was one of the rulings that was used at the time to justify gathering bodies, because the idea was that moral support is so important. Now, I'll tell you, I don't remember where I said this story so many times. I don't remember if I said it in this sheer group or not. But in the beginning of the war, I was on Shmirah here in Alon Shvut on a Friday night, late at night. And I see that in drives, my next door neighbor down the road, not my next door neighbor, my neighbor down the road, she drives in with her police car. She works for the police. And she drives in at 12 o'clock at night. So I thought, you know, she's my neighbor. So I made like a bit of a crack at her. I said, you know, oh, wow. You know, this is the time you finish work on Shabbos, right? It's okay. She's my neighbor. She knows my sense of humor. She is head of forensics in the Israeli police. And she said to me that they're working shifts of 24/7 to identify the bodies from October the 7th. They had piles and piles of bodies, and they had to go through and identify them. First of all, she said they had to separate the terrorists from the victims. They used for that DNA, by the way, which is fascinating. They used DNA to separate them. But anyway, nevertheless, she said they're working 24/7. So I asked her, I said to her, I'm not asking because I'm criticizing. I'm asking because I really want to know. I said, were there a bunch of the police involved in this decision? For that, did they give you a psak that you should work on Shabbos? Or just assume that you do this? She said, no. She said, the rabbi of the police ruled that we have to continue working 24/7. I asked her if she can send me, please, the letter that he gave, because this fascinates me, it interests me very much. What did he base it? So I had the letter, and it's fascinating. What was the reason that he agreed, that he argued that you're allowed to work? And it's funny, because I think our gut feeling is, yeah, of course you're allowed to, right? But why? What is really the reason? So the real reason, by the way, is a very simple reason that I wasn't thinking of. The reason is because in the beginning of the war, you all remember, no one knew what was going on. No one knew how many captives there were. No one knew how many. Even now, by the way, we don't know for exact. We don't know exactly everything. But you know, it's only the Palestinians who know within 3 minutes of a bomb exactly how many people were killed, with their IDs, with their ages. Right? In 3 minutes, they give you a list of a bombing. It takes Tzal with all technology 5 months, because we actually are trying to find out the truth, not just giving out numbers and who knows what. So when we verify that one of the bodies is a someone that is the name, we verify the name, then we take them off the list of a potential captive, which would change, of course, how the army will deal with the situation. So it's very important, as soon as we can, to know who's alive, who's not alive, who's taken captive, right? These are very important things. But there's also an element of morale, of worrying, of the families, of knowing what's going on. How much is that a real factor in our discussion? So this is a very interesting idea again. How much are we willing to consider the factor of boosting morale as a factor for breaking Shabbat? Before we go back to our halachic situation that we spoke about, I want to explain a bit more about this idea of permitting to break Shabbat in order to boost morale. I said the example that I thought was a very powerful one was allowing to gather bodies on Shabbat, because if we don't, it'll hurt the morale of the Israeli soldier. I want to discuss a little bit more where that comes from. We said before that in Pikuach Nefesh does not mean only the life that's in danger itself, but perhaps any support, any help that the person needs that could perhaps endanger them, right? I'll give you an example, right? If a woman's giving birth again, and she says, "Oh, I need to put on the fan. Put on the fan. I'm too hot." So are you allowed to put on the fan on Shabbat for her? Yeah, of course you are. Even though we all know, very hard to say that if it's a bit hot, her life is in danger, right? But again, when a person is in a situation, we want to make them as comfortable as they can. If they say, go out and buy me a can of Coke from the machine, and she doesn't realize it's Shabbat, we buy her a can of Coke from the machine. We take into consideration that a patient that is in danger needs a lot of support and help and needs whatever gives them that comfort, may calm them down. So that's stretching Pikuach Nefesh, but it's still under the Pikuach Nefesh. If this would be the model that would be used for war to permit, let's say, gathering bodies on Shabbat, one could say, okay, listen, it's not obviously if a body is in the field, so it's not pikuach nefesh to gather the body, but
If the Israeli soldier sees his friend lying there in the ditch, it might affect him in a bad way, that when he goes to battle the next morning, he won't fight as well as he should. So you see how many if and whats and buts we're using to allow us to do this. However, it's not so simple, because we just said that pikuach nefesh overrides Shabbat perhaps only on a d'chuya level. It only postpones it, not necessarily cancels it. So it's not so clear if this would be the halachic phrase, the halachic term that we would use to permit breaking Shabbat in this case. It's not so simple to argue that we would allow so much. Therefore, comes Rav Goren in one of the most revolutionary ideas I think that he ever thought of, and taught a halacha that has become since, I would say, one of the more well-known, accepted sources of halacha in breaking Shabbat in wartime. He brought up this idea, and I'm sharing now in the source sheet that I'm giving you right now. Rav Goren made this source very famous. The Torah teaches us in its source number 2, the Torah says the following. When you besiege a city, you are supposed to build a siege around a city because you have to prevent the enemy from running away. The Torah teaches us that you should not destroy all the trees. And the Torah teaches us you should fight this city ad ridita. You see those words, ad ridita? In the translation that I have in front of you, it says, until its submission. The question really is, what is the Torah adding by the words ad ridita? What are we adding here that we're teaching us, you shall fight the enemy till the end? What would be the alternative? So the Yerushalmi, the Talmud Yerushalmi teaches us that ad ridita means, I'm highlighting it here in the source number 3, afilu b'Shabbat. This is referring, by the way, to the war, the first war that we had in Eretz Yisrael, the days of Yehoshua, was surrounding the city of Jericho for a whole week. They went around the city every time that there are akafas, right? And the seventh day, they did 7 akafas, like in Simchas Torah, and the city, the walls fell down. According to many commentaries and Gemara, the Gemara, it also here teaches us that that happened on Shabbat. And this serves us as a very important halachic factor, a source, I'm sorry, that one is allowed to fight on Shabbat. Now you could say, what's a chiddush? Of course, pikuach nefesh, right? Pikuach nefesh. So first of all, it's not so simple that the war in Jericho was pikuach nefesh. They could have done it on Sunday, right? For 7 days, you're surrounding the city. No one's leaving the city. You can choose what day to destroy the city. Does it have to be on Shabbat? Oh, perhaps the Torah is teaching us that even if it's not necessarily, you could do it on Shabbat. And that's what the Gemara seems to say. Ad ridita, until its submission, afilu b'Shabbat. Afilu b'Shabbat. Says Rav Goren, why do I need this Gemara to teach me that you're allowed to fight on Shabbat if pikuach nefesh surely is a good enough source to be used to break Shabbat in a war situation? Says Rav Goren, you see from here that there's a special source in the Torah that teaches us that on Shabbat you're allowed to go to war. What's the difference? Oh, says Rav Goren, if I would use pikuach nefesh as my main source, it's not so simple as we just proved before how far we can expand the pikuach nefesh idea. What is permitted under the pikuach nefesh heter? Could I, I'll give you just cases that I have, let's say it's Friday night and I have people on Shmira. They're guarding the base and it's a cold night. Can I go around on the Jeep on Shabbat giving them hot tea? Can you drive on Shabbat to serve hot drinks for Israeli soldiers who are doing Shmirah?
I'm telling you now, they'll be fine if they drink, they'll drink whatever they have in their canteens. Oh, if it's like, you know, it's like they're in the Charmon and they're freezing to death, obviously, pikuach nefesh, you're allowed to break Shabbat, give them hot cholent, whatever they need, right? But if it's not such a cold Shabbat, but it just gives them a bit more strength. It gives them a bit more strength to be on Shmira. Meaning, these questions, what exactly is considered under the heter pikuach nefesh, is not so simple. But says Rav Gorin, if I use the heter of adridita, I think we can expand more situations that could be included in the heter of what we can do in wartime. There's no doubt that the heter to bring bodies to gather bodies on Shabbat is, it can be understood much more, can be taken and can be used. The heter can be used much more once we apply this idea of ad ridita. Once we apply this idea that in war, Shabbat is pushed aside. It's like the parallel to Hutra. The parallel to Hutra would be Adridita. And Rav Goren really used this halacha to give more heterim for on Shabbat. Now, after we said all that, let's go back to our situation. Is it really allowed to, a soldier is given now a few hours to go home to see his family? So there were some rabbis who said, listen, not seeing your family for such a long time is creating a feeling of weakness, even of people, you know, they miss their kids, they miss their wives, they miss their parents, and we know that by seeing them, it'll give them a lot of, it'll boost their morale, they'll fight better. But some rabbis use that, based upon what we learned today, to say that if Chayal is given a few hours to leave the base, then even if it's on Shabbat, he can go back and forth to the base. Now, the truth is that there's a lot to discuss here, which I'm not going to. I'll just mention it. There's a very famous question. There's a halachic sugi about this. If a person is called on Shabbat to go save a life, it could be a policeman, it could be a fireman, it could be a soldier, it could be a doctor, it could be a nurse. So the Gemara says that they are allowed to go back on Shabbat. Again, I'm not going into the whole sugya right now. Because, why? Because we're concerned that if we don't permit them to go back to where they came from on Shabbat, next time they're called, they won't leave the house. They'll say, what, are we punished? We're going to leave the house to save a life and then be stuck for 12 hours in the middle of nowhere. So this is the famous heter. I don't know if there are any doctors or nurses here in the crowd right now, but this is a very famous heter that many people use today to allow doctors and nurses on Shabbat to travel to a hospital when they have work on Shabbat. It's not a simple heter. I'm not going to go into it right now. It's a machloket between Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and Rav Moshe Feinstein. If it would be permitted only derabbanan or even deraisa in Israel, by the way, they only allow it when a non-Jew drives the doctor or the nurse to their shift on Shabbat. I think in Schutzarts it's a little bit different. I think Rav Moshe was more lenient about this. This is not my topic, but this does obviously touch upon our question, and these questions come up all the time, but today I'm not discussing that aspect. That is an important angle to discuss. I'm discussing something a little bit different, whether or not we should take in consideration the fact that by going out to visit and see your loved ones, how important is that for people, for a part in winning or in winning the war. People will have a high morale that they'll be able to fight better. So some rabbis really said this. I remember during the war, I met two Rosh Yeshivas. I'll say the name. Rav Sabato. I'm sure people heard of Rav Chaim Sabato from Ale Adumim. Maybe some of you have read his books. Very famous author here in Israel. Rav Sabato is a very big Tamid Chacham who was well known as a well known author. And his most famous book, I think, was his description of the Yom Kippur War as a young man who was drafted and fought in the Yom Kippur War. I met him at a wedding in the middle of the war, and I said to him, Rav Sabato, what do you think about this heter that is very popular right now to allow soldiers on Shabbat to go home? He said to me, no, can't be. I don't believe it. I said to him, Rav Sabato, I'm telling you, I met people who told me this. I know the rabbi. He said, no, I can't believe it. And he said to me, you know, I fought the Yom Kippur War, the Six-Day War. We didn't go home ever, right? We stayed and we were strong and we would never break Shabbat. And he was like very upset to hear about this. So the other Rosh Yeshiva that works with him said, he said to him, I think I agree more with you. He said to me that we permitted. And I think that this reflects perhaps a different generation. It could be that they were a bit more tough then. I don't know. I'm not, you know, judging, but the way he described it, I think that there's other factors which I want to bring into this discussion, which may be why perhaps the older generation did not see it this way, the way we see it this way, for two reasons. First of all, I think that we're living in a generation where mental health is something that we are so much more aware than we were 30, 40 years ago. I think that there's so much talk about this topic, which I'm not going to, but take even post-trauma. Post-trauma, if I'm not mistaken, World War II, when soldiers came back, they were called shell-shocked. Was that World War I, World War II? I don't know. But people did not even recognize the idea of a post-trauma from war. Today, there's so much more awareness. The Israeli army, by the way, I was told stories. I mean, when all the units came home the past few weeks, everyone, my son-in-law told me, they were given days and days of therapy. Days of therapy. My student, who's a sniper, told me that during his missions as a sniper, he has consultations and meetings with a psychologist. They don't wait for 5 years later. They realize, for example, for a sniper, you know, it's something that's very difficult to do, and it can have bad effects. So the Israeli army is much more aware. We are all more aware. Doctors, rabbis, the community, society, everyone is more aware. And I think this is a reflection of that too, that we understand how important it is to see family, to see your kids, to see your wife, to see your parents. It is important not just for the soldiers, but for the people of Israel. The second reason I think why this war brought this up so much also is because I think that this war, unfortunately, created a lot of terrible, I would say, feelings that we are not used to having in this country and in the Jewish community. I'm not going to compare it, but people like to compare Yom Kippur War, Holocaust. It is for sure one of the most traumatic events that occurred in the since the Holocaust in the Jewish community. The feelings of despair, the emotional response that the Jewish community is feeling, I think is part of the reason why many rabbis felt that we need to boost the morale. We need to strengthen our soldiers. We need to strengthen our community even more so this time than other times. So I think these two reasons are perhaps the reason why this heter was given a bit more freely during this war than it would perhaps in other wars, which is important, because if what I'm saying is true, then we have to be a bit careful not to use it always as a heter. Yeah, you know, go, it's Shabbat, you can go back and go forth. We have to be a bit careful, because at the end of the day, we also have to make sure that we keep Shabbat we keep Shabbat to be what you know, to be Shabbat, and we can't just disregard Shabbat. In this context, I want to tell you a story that Rav Rimon, the Rav of our shul, Alon Shvut, made famous. He publicized this. He put it up and he sent it to people. He had a question asked to him by an Israeli soldier in the first 3 weeks of the war, who told him the following. He said, this was Thursday. He wrote to Rav Rimon and he said to him, "Rabbi, Mazel Tov. My wife had a baby this week, and the army said I can go home for the bris." "Oh, great. There's one problem. The bris will be Shabbos morning, 8 o'clock in the morning." And the army said to me, "No problem. You can go to the bris. You can leave Friday night at 10 p.m. and you have to be back at 10 a.m. We allow you to go. You can go." So he was asking a very strange question. The question was, would he be allowed, is it permitted for him to go to the bris? Now, you know, this is a very strange question. Why? Because I don't think anyone in the world would ever give a heter in this, and it, you know, it's a very emotional question. You want to cry when you hear it? Fine. I'm with you. It's a really heartbreaking question. But, okay, Shabbat is Shabbat. You know, I remember when in 2002, when I was in the army in Shechem, so my wife was her 9th month pregnant, and I was so worried that she would deliver a baby and I would miss the bris of my son. And because as it happens to be, there was a guy down the road from where I live that was also serving in Shechem. He was a serious soldier, not like me. He was like an officer in some really, you know, hotshot unit. And I heard the rumor was going around that he didn't go to his son's bris. He didn't make it. He was fighting in the war. And I was remember. So it could happen. And Shabbat is Shabbat. What can you do? So Rav Rimon apparently discussed it with him and said to him, of course, halachically, for a bris, there's no heter to break Shabbat. However, if you feel that, you know, leaving the army to go see your family is such an important thing, and that this will give you strength to fight, and it'll give you the emotional backing and morale, you know, that will help you fight a war and the war when you're about to go fight. So I think you can use that as a heter. And what was fascinating is that he received a letter the next day on the Friday before Shabbos. The guy wrote to him, "Rabbi, thank you very much. But I decided that there's no real heter for me to drive on Shabbat back and forth for my son's bris." He said, "I, Baruch Hashem, I'm strong enough. I don't feel this is going to change my ability to fight. I understand what we're fighting for. I've no doubts in my mind. And I feel that keeping Shabbat at this moment is more important than going to my son's bris. I pray that when my son will grow up, he will ask me why I didn't go to his bris. I will be able to explain to him that I was fighting for our people and I was keeping Shabbat. And that is the reason why we should, you know, those should be the reasons that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should protect us and help us in the war." And I think it's an astonishing story because he could have used it, right? He could have said, "Okay, a rabbi gave me a heter. It's not such a simple heter, but some rabbi, Orthodox rabbi, gave him a heter." And he felt uncomfortable. And I think that that's a very good story because, first of all, it shows that our soldiers, Baruch Hashem, it's very clear to them what they're fighting for. It's important to boost morale. It's very important. But we have to be a bit careful how far, you know, we're going to go in the name of boosting morale, especially to when it comes to such important ideals like Shmirat Shabbat. We have to be a bit careful. I'm not judging right now. Again, I'm not judging right or wrong. I'm just sharing with you the dilemmas that came up and suggesting that these heterim, again, are based upon Rav Gorin's famous Chiddush, that the heter for fighting on Shabbat is its own halachic category, and it's not part of the classic pikuach nefesh model. Using that option, I think, gives us more strength to be more lenient in these things. But at the same time, one has to be careful. One has to be careful to not to use it too often, because I think then we can actually perhaps damage other principles like Shabbat. And in front of you, I have the source sheet. I'm just wanna I didn't use it too much today, but I will show you that on this source sheet it's where Rav Goren famously gave his heter. Look at source number 5, right? Rav Goren says, although the halacha is clear that bodies cannot be moved on Shabbat in circumstances where keeping the dead in the army post will hurt the morale of the soldiers and thus have an ill effect on the motivation to fight the enemy, we permit soldiers to move the dead to the closest area. So this is Rav Goren's famous heter that he gave, and it serves as a very important halachic precedent that one could use perhaps in other situations like we mentioned today. So that was my shir today. It's the last of a 5-week series in which we spoke about certain halachic challenges that have come up the past few months here in Israel. I wanted to show that these are real challenges. These are real questions that are happening as we speak. I hope that I shared with you more part of what's going through people's minds and feelings, emotions. It's a very emotional time. I tried very much to stay away from politics, and I tried very much also not to necessarily give over a clear cut psak halacha, because I wanted to share the dilemmas. There's a lot of gray area here, and I don't know if in each and every case it's so clear what the answer is, but I shared with you, I hope, the different kind of idea that went through our communities, and especially in the religious community, when debating these kind of questions. At least I can say, Baruch Hashem, we are living in times when we have an army that can fight for us, and what we would do to have such questions for hundreds of years in Jewish history. So the silver lining is that we have Baruch Hashem Israeli soldiers who are fighting for us, and maybe the silver lining is that we can debate these questions after 2,000 years, where we couldn't. So that should be the zchut of our chayalim. Please God should protect them and bring victory to the Jewish people. Thank you for participating in the last 5 weeks. I hope to see you again at some point, hopefully in better times, where we can discuss more theoretical situations rather than ones that come up like they do now. I'm happy to stay in touch with people. Wanna stay in touch and email me or WhatsApp me with questions or just comments. They want to talk about things. I'm happy to be in touch. All my information, you can get it through Rabbi Jay Kelman. I wanna say goodbye and Erev Tov and Shabbat Shalom to everyone. And if anyone has a comment or a question, bakasha.
Can you post the sources again? I came on late.
All the sources hopefully will be on the website of Rabbi Kelman. I'll send it to Rabbi Kelman, and he'll hopefully post them so you can have access to them.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Beseder, everyone. Litrot bintime.
Thank you. Thank you very much.